Coming up, NBA draft. Cam Whitmore, what happened? That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Viator. You know how to book flights and hotels. I mean, how could you not? What about the experiences you'll have when you arrive? That's where Viator comes in. You know, if you're a hotel snob, they're going to help you. What do you want from your hotel? You want big, comfy beds? Do you want to look out at something? Do you want a nice shower? They're going to figure out all of it for you. Viator has thousands of travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between, especially if you're going somewhere tropical. I mean, how do we know? You go in another country. How do you know what to trust, where to stay? Well, you go to Viator. Download the Viator app right now. Use code Viator, V-I-A-T-O-R, 10 for 10% off your first booking. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. This episode is brought to you by Netflix. Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Seven-time world champion, modern-day legend, my favorite quarterback ever, Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, finally gets roasted. It's going to be hosted by Kevin Hart, and Tom Brady will get his cleats held to the fire by famous friends, frenemies, the roast master himself, Jeff Ross. It's going to be an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the roast of Tom Brady live only on Netflix. Also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. You can find the first two parts of NBA Draftapalooza on this feed. This is part three. We were taping. It's about 7:30. We're going to wait until the Celtics picked at 25. But the draft became so slow. They were interviewing a college coach for like 10 minutes. And we were like, screw it. We're starting. Here we go. Bring in Pearl Jam. All right, I'm here with Kevin O'Connor, the Shakespeare of NBA Draft Twitter, and Tate Frazier. We just watched the first 21 picks of the NBA Draft. It was the Wembanyama draft. It was Miller versus Scoot. It was the Cam Whitmore free fall. It was Orlando causing Steve Cerruti to text us, it feels like we drafted Elfrid Payton again. So we have that. Orlando is back. A bizarre ESPN telecast. There's just a lot to cover here. Well, remember that this is the Wemby draft. We don't have to talk about Wemby, right? I mean, he got interviewed.
Yeah, how many interviews has he done tonight?
Yeah, we're good. Wemby, amazing. Good. 20 years from now, I'll remember that you got drafted. All right. Scoot versus Miller.
Oof.
Just a FanDuel roller coaster ride on the odds. And then Brandon Miller goes second. KOC has now moved into a corner here. With Brandon Miller. Now you have to be right. You're all in. You're like, this was the pick. This is the right thing.
Yeah, he's like patting me on the back. I'm like Hugo the Hornet. I'm like peeled over. I don't know what to do with myself. And KOC's like, it's the right pick.
Congrats.
Don't worry about it.
Tate Charlotte fan devastated that they didn't take Scoot. Why was this the right pick, KOC?
Brandon Miller is 6'9". He provides playmaking. Scoot Henderson is 6'2". He's a target on defense. He's an iffy shooter. Brandon Miller is a knockdown shooter. So I think for Charlotte, we talked about this in your part two. There was reason to take Scoot. Leadership, intangibles, it factor.
He was described as ultra competitive.
Yes, but Brandon Miller, now they have two big primary playmakers. They have versatility. Miller can still push ball off the ball and kind of unleash his ability off screens and spot ups and relocating and cutting.
Tate's still not excited.
No, I'm excited. I'm turning around. I'm trying to turn around.
KOC was working on you for 3 hours.
Well, I mean, for you, Tate, with Miller and now Ball together, and now you get Mark Williams, rim protector, you hope you bring back PJ Washington. In this situation,
they can play these 35 wins
jumbo lineups. They can be massive.
Right. I like being big. You know what I mean? I like the backcourt, and I like the idea of a 6'7" point guard, a 6'9" shooting guard. That's enticing. There's reasons to be excited about Brandon Miller. And honestly, I want to be excited about Brandon Miller. I just had fallen in love with Scoot. Like you talked about that competitiveness. I like the birth certificate idea. You know what I mean? There was a lot going on for Scoot Henderson, but Brandon Miller, Muggsy Bogues said he was the pick. I'm going to ride with Muggsy. I think it was the right pick.
Tate, I don't believe any of this.
Where's the lie detector test? I don't believe. My heart is pounding.
I've never seen. First of all, you were disconsolate for 10 minutes after the
pick. I didn't think you talked a word.
He was just slumped in his seat. Yeah. Then I started cracking jokes. You slowly came back. At one point, they showed it was Charlotte's fourth number two pick. They showed the graphic.
Oh, no.
And it was Alonzo Mourning. All
good
right.
One. After LJ,
Emeka Okafor. He wasn't bad. He was better than you think.
Yeah.
Michael Kidd-Gilchrist didn't work out that well. And Brandon Miller. And I think I could see the fear in Tate's eyes. And I had to make the 1-for-4 joke. But I guess we'll find out. I would have taken Scoot. I just feel like he's got the it factor. What's fun about, as an NBA fan, this was a much more fun scenario, right? Because Portland has to take him at 3. He makes no sense on the roster they have. Like, literally the last thing they needed was a 6'2", I need the ball guards. They have Dame, they have Simons, got Shaedon Sharpe there. He's, you know, he can't legally drink. Scoot can't legally drink. Dame's going to be 33. And I think the feeling around the league, I'm sure you've heard this, is if this is the direction this goes, watch out for Dame. Windhorst said that on my podcast on Tuesday. So now the Dame watch is on KOC.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I'm almost surprised nothing happened big tonight out of nowhere as soon as Scoot was the pick. But I think we're at a point now where you have all those guys, not just the youth, but the lack of size in the backcourt. I mean, you can't win many games with Damian Lillard and Scoot Henderson and Anthony Simons. And Shaedon Sharpe has some length and athleticism, but it's not like he's 6'8", 6'9".
Don't forget about Nurkic's complete lack of rim protection and any sort of defensive ability at all.
This guy, I mean, he's a dead weight right now at the center position for Portland. Like, if they're going to keep Dame, they need to improve the center spot, but they're still small in the backcourt. So I just think for Damian Lillard at this point and for the Blazers, it's best to split up. And whether it's Miami or Brooklyn or if Portland says, screw your list, we're trading him for the best player, best offer we get. I just think those guys are better off splitting up.
Mm. It's going to be sad when Miami takes that kid today and everybody's like, oh my God, what an unbelievable pick. Heat culture. You get Latin American and right, no.
Oh, he's going to get traded to Portland.
Yeah, he's going to get traded to Portland in like a week.
And he plays just like Jimmy Butler, you know what I mean? Like, if you watch Jaime Jaquez in college, at times you're like, wow, you know, to use KOC's term, shades of Jimmy Butler. So him playing behind Jimmy makes a lot of sense. He can endear himself to the community of Miami. He's a winning player. He checks all those boxes, and he's gone for Dame Lillard.
and he's going to play in about a week. So this worked out great for Scoot.
Does, yeah.
Because now he goes to Portland. They're, I would guess, probably going to trade Dame for either to Brooklyn or Miami or some mystery team and be like, all right, here we go. We got all the young guns now. We're going to keep Simons. We're going to keep Sharp. We got Scoot.
They also got Chris Murray. That's their pick at 23. That just came in as we record.
Interesting. Who was the 22nd pick, just out of curiosity?
Dariq Whitehead to the Nets.
Oh. So my guy Omax is still available.
Yes.
On real time on this podcast.
Real time, you're gonna hear me
have a little Omax chasm. So for Scoot though, Portland, I couldn't help but think about once upon a time, guy by the name Michael Jordan fell to 3.
Mm.
Team
come on.
Picking 2. they had a need.
Is this Sam Bowie redemption here? Like, well,
they had a team picking number 2, the Portland Trailblazers. They're like, we're good at all these. What we really need is a big guy. Yeah, we got Clyde Drexler. What do we need? We don't need another shooting guard. They took Sam Bowie. Now, all these years later, maybe it flips.
This is too much for Scoot.
Yeah.
Scoot is going to be a good player.
Listen, it sounded great. I didn't say it was true.
I just fell over again.
Poor Tate.
No, Scoot's not Michael Jordan.
I mean, Scoot's going to be a good point guard. I mean, he's just going to be. He has that it factor. He's got that, you know, dog in him, right? Like, all these intangible qualities. He can pass. He can get to the basket. He's a fearless player. He's had clutch moments for the Ignite this past season. He's going to be good.
I just want you to be protected. Just leave an open mind for the Scoot ceiling.
I mean, there's a chance.
I don't want you to just say this is a 3-floor house.
There's a chance.
Okay.
There's a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance.
He's saying there's a 3-person draft. There, you know what I mean? And Scoot just was 3rd for him.
There is a chance, but there's also a chance like Amen and Ausar Thompson are both better. Like with Scoot,
oh, a five-person draft. Never mind.
He's 6'2". He still needs to improve. He still needs to improve as a shooter. Still needs to improve at getting the basket and finishing at a high level, drawing fouls. And defensively, he's 6'2". You get targeted. So I just think the expectations
he's
for Scoot.
He's ultra competitive, though.
And but that's why expectations have just gone through the roof for him, because he's so lovable. So I hope he reaches those expectations, but like, temper them a little
bit. Did you like the grill? That's a good question. When I saw the grill and I saw the flash, I was saying to myself, I feel like I like his moxie. I like the confidence. I like that he thinks he's the number one pick. You know, a lot of times you want a guy that thinks he's supposed to be the number one pick. Those are the things I like about Scoot.
I like the grill the first four times he showed off the grill. But like around number 13, I started to get a little worried. I think this works out great for him. Now it's like, this was a three-player draft, then it dropped. I was picked third. Well, I'm as good as those. Now he'll have the little
that
thing.
That chip's even bigger for him.
And he's also, if they trade Dame, it'll be a bad team next year, which is great for him. Good conference. He'll have the ball more. I just don't know what that Dame trade is. Like Brooklyn. So Brooklyn, who were their two picks at 21 and 22?
They had Noah Clowney at 21 out of Alabama, center. Then Derek Whitehead at 22, Duke. Guard/wing, head injuries, 2 foot surgeries.
So both of those guys could be heading
number
to
two
Portland.
Player
if
in
Brooklyn.
Class.
Yeah, if Brooklyn trades for Dame, which I don't think can be ruled out. And then other than that, for Dame teams, the only other one I could think of is Atlanta. If Trey was on the table, which there's been no rumors about that at all. I
mean, what about Boston? Is there any world in which Boston tries to get involved?
Well, he basically already said he didn't want to go there.
Chris Haynes, who's
a lot of people have said they want to go places.
I know.
Yeah, he's incredibly tight with Dame. Obviously, he said it's not going to happen. Like, just flat out said it's not going to happen. So, I mean, other than that,
Celtics aren't trading Jaylen Brown. I mean, that's at least for the next year, he's on the team. So they don't have enough to get him anyway.
And Portland wouldn't want Jaylen Brown unless they were keeping Damian Lillard.
Right.
Right.
It's kind of a catch 22.
And even then, I'm not sure they would have wanted to give up number three, considering they don't know if Jaylen would resign. So
the one that could have made sense is Philly, but they just don't have the picks because it's like Maxi Harris plus, and then there's no plus.
It really might just be the Heat and the Nets, and that's about it. Other than that, I mean, who has either the assets or the need for another point guard? Just not many teams.
Well, I would have said maybe Orlando, but they absolutely, in my opinion, whiffed on the draft with 6 and 11. I don't really understand what happened. They take Anthony Black at 6. They take Jed Howard at 11, which drew gasps in our little draft viewing room. What did you have, Jed Howard, 20th?
20th on my board, yeah.
There's just other guys we liked more than that. Meanwhile, in the middle of those, Cason Wallace went 10. And my guy French Pippen went 7.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I wanted
Cousin Sal was all over Koulibaly for you, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He bet that. He took that. He won that. So congratulations.
All you had to see was 2 videos of him just blocking stuff off the shot clock. I feel like Orlando missed an opportunity at KOC.
I like the Anthony Black pick at 6.
Me too.
I mean, he's a good connected
piece. All right,
talk
me into it, because he feels a little Alfred Payton-y to me.
So let's play to the Alfred Payton part first.
Yep.
Lack of jumper. He's needed to prove himself, especially sharing the floor with Franz Wagner, who's a solid shooter but not a knockdown shooter. Wendell Carter, same thing. So for Orlando, that's where you have concern there. However, the connective playmaking ability, like that guy just makes rapid decisions. He's a high IQ guy, a tough, big 6'7 defender at the guard spot. So we're talking size in the NBA. Like that's going to be a trend with some of these young teams. You have Charlotte, and now this big Oklahoma City across the board, big, long teams. And then Orlando, they're going to be putting out lineups where Anthony Black is the smallest guy. And yet all 5 players on the floor still have skill and handling ability. The question's the jumper, and that's where Jet Howard, I think drafting him is a bet on. He's 6'8". He's not a defender yet. He's not a passer yet, but he's a scorer. He can shoot. So the things that he doesn't do well, they would hope are covered up by the things that he
You're
does well,
too
which
nice.
Is scoring.
You
however,
guys both hated this pick.
However, with Jet Howard at 11, I agree. I would have went, with Grady Dick instead. I would have went a different direction.
Why would you take Jet Howard over Grady Dick? You watch more college basketball than anyone.
Well,
I think
they saw the suit and they said we cannot take this.
They were wondering why he was dressed
honestly,
like a magician.
Not a bad reason.
They had him until they saw
flag.
The suit.
It's kind of like last year at the draft. I feel like they saw Paolo Banchero and they saw him standing next to Jabari Smith and they said, okay, well, that guy's the number one pick.
Yeah, right. He was literally a walking red flag wearing that suit.
I was trying to come up with a nickname. The best I could do was Siegfried and Brandon Roy, but I don't, he just looked like he was a Vegas entertainer who was.
He had shoulder pads.
Yeah, heading out for a cigarette between breaks of like his.
Maybe he didn't want to go to Orlando, but he's going to Toronto now. But like you said, KOC, they needed a shooter. So I understand you're trying to talk yourself into Jed Howard. He has the wingspan. John Hammond loves the wingspan. So that makes sense. It's nice for Anthony Black. He doesn't have to be the primary ball handler for this team. You got Franz Wagner. You got Cole Anthony. You got, you know, Suggs. And durability is the big thing with Anthony Black. He plays. He played the most minutes on Arkansas. He shows up. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to have turnovers, but he's also not going to be a problem for you. So, and he can guard 1, 2, and 3. That's another nice piece to have a guard who can slide down at 6'7".
Well, I'll look for him during Magic games, and I'll be able to find him because nobody will be within 4 feet of him in their half-court offense.
Yeah.
He'll just be standing by himself as they double-team Paolo with his guy.
To defend Cerruti, though, I think the hair was hurting him. I think Cerruti saw the hair, saw the number next to the pick, and was like, oh, my God, is this Elfrid Payton?
Anthony Black
is not Elfrid Payton.
Okay, good.
I think he's better.
They do need shooting, though, still. I mean, like, Jed Howard helps, but, I mean, like, with Black, Banchero, Wagner, Carter, that would be the concern with that team. Like, how much better are those guys going to get? Banchero was one of the least efficient jump shooters from both mid-range and three this past season. Off the catch, off the dribble, it didn't matter. So like they need like internal improvement for it all to work.
So Toronto ends up with Grady Dick at 13, which is another red flag if you're Orlando, because Toronto usually drafts really well.
Yeah.
I just would have taken Grady Dick. I did ask during his interview whether he was foreign. I know he's from Kansas, but it became unclear after a while. It's like, is he from here? We're going to take a quick break and then we'll hit some of the other big storylines.
Omax went to the Mavs at 24. And the Celtics are trading the 25th pick to 31. And they took Marcus Sasser at 25, and they're trading it to the Pistons. So now the Celtics have number 31 instead of number 25. I bet you they wanted Omax.
We're going to take a break so I can stick my head in the oven. All right, we're coming back. Not only did the Celtics not get Omax, but what happened? How did Dallas get him from Sacramento?
So Dallas absorbed Rashawn Holmes from the Kings into their traded player exception they got for trading Davis Bertans. And with the 24th pick from the Kings, they drafted Omax Prosper out of Marquette. So now they've got Derek Lively with the 12th pick, and then Omax Prosper with the 24th pick, and added Rashawn Holmes. So pretty good haul, I'd say.
So we're looking at Rashawn Holmes was $12 million because they gave him a dumb contract 2 years ago. I like when teams have to make trades for mistakes that they made. It's like, whoops. So we got Fox at 32.6 and Sabonis at 19.4. That's 53. Herter at almost 16. That's almost 70. Monk at 80. So they have free agent money now. As you know, I like to do math as I do the podcast. Yeah. But for them to trade 24 and Holmes tells me they're targeting somebody or something. Could it be Grant Williams? Could it be who else? Who else would make sense for them?
I'm just trying to figure out their exact financial situation.
Well, they're going to have enough for somebody for like 20, 25 million. So who else makes sense for them? Or could that be like they try to trade for somebody? All right, we're going to watch them. Dallas, they go back from 10 to 12 and take Derek Lively. We'll talk about OKC in a second. Mm-hmm. The ESPN announcers made it seem like Lively came on like a freight train as the year went along. Fortunately, we have Tate here who watches college basketball. Tate, what was the exact story with Derek Lively here?
Well, Lively was when he first started at Duke, right? He was the number one player in the country. There was a lot of conversation about, you know, he was a stretch five, right? That was the big narrative, right? He was going to come in. He was going to block shots. He was going to hit threes. He was the prototypical ideal center in the NBA moving forward. He did not make a shot outside of the paint until February. And
that's bad, right?
Don't fact check that, but I'm pretty sure that is the truth. And it was all dunks. This guy could not do anything except for dunk the basketball. And then all of a sudden, you know, Carolina Blue comes to town, and a flip was switched. He had a great game. A lot of scouts watched that game. Talked about his elite rim protecting.
Was a switch flipped or a flip was switched?
Yeah, well, both. My brain was broken. So that's what happened. And at that time, you know what I mean? It felt like Lively just shot up the boards. And then the Mavericks talked themselves into it because they needed rim protection. Lively's probably the best on the board. He also was the number one player. But we have to remember it was a COVID class, right? So it was not scouted as it usually is. Not to say that the scouts are always correct, but he was the number one player in the last COVID class. So
Whitehead, Smith, I mean, right. The other guys up top have all fallen.
It's
yeah, we
great.
Looked at that list, and what was George from Baylor was number six in that class.
Yeah, George. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Brandon Miller was ninth.
Yeah.
And then like Grady Dick was like 14th. And yeah,
Chet
it was
Howard
just
was like 45.
Yeah, it was
like
a
that.
Weird. Yeah.
I mean, I think for the Mavs, I mean, like the player type makes sense. I mean, yes. It's just a matter of how good is he actually going to be and how soon. When the pressure is on to start winning with Luka, when he was struggling for the far majority of the season as a freshman. But like, I think the player type, like just to like to give love to the upside of him, he is a lob guy. And he is versatile on defense. He's not just a rim protector. He can at least, you know, switch a little bit comfortably. So I think for Dallas.
Christian Wood 2.0?
More like JaVale, right?
More like JaVale.
Well, they've had both of them.
Like a younger,
neither of them
a younger,
younger JaVale with less of the headache.
Yeah, you would hope better than JaVale, obviously, but something like that. And then Omax Prosper, like you love him, Bill. His versatility, his size.
Him.
I think adding him as a wing defender
hurt.
For them. They're trying to bolster their defense, clearly, with what they've done tonight.
Well, so going backwards, they throw away the last week of the season so they can get the number 10 pick. They take that number 10 pick. They go back two spots and dump Bertans' salary. In that salary spot, they trade with the Kings, put Rashawn Holmes, who's like $5 million cheaper than Bertans, get 24 and do Omax.
Yeah.
Omax. So they wouldn't have been able to do any of that if they didn't tank the last week of the season. Flip side, Miami's a playing team that made the finals and came within three wins of winning the title, and they had Luka Doncic. I still don't know what the right answer is. I don't like throwing away seasons when I have one of the best five players in the league. But then you read or hear during the summer that Luka's lost at least 15 pounds.
Mm. I mean, he looks good in the video.
So maybe it was just a throwaway year for him, and they realized, like, oh,
I don't
God,
trust
this
summer
shit
workout
shit.
Videos.
You don't?
I don't know if it's a Ben Simmons thing, but any of these guys, you know what I mean? And in college, the same thing happens. Every time a guy comes from freshman to sophomore year, he added 15 pounds of weight, but he also lost 30 pounds of fat. And he also grew 6 inches, and he also learned how to shoot 35% or better from beyond the three-point.
Right.
You know, a lot of that stuff, I feel
Should
like.
Should we have done summer workout videos for Kyle before the wedding?
He's looking good over there.
Kyle, you do look good. Look how serene he is. Married Kyle.
Constantly smiling.
So happy over there.
And he's got no concerns for the NBA draft. This isn't like the NFL draft, you know what I mean, where he's talking himself into Patriots picks.
I love it. Well, with Dallas, we were wondering, could dumping Bertans lead to my Draymond theory that Draymond was potentially going there. And the research was Kyrie's cap hold was so big that they would have had to renounce Kyrie to then have the cap space. I still feel like they have cap space, though.
They would have had to re-sign Kyrie to a smaller number. Like, let's just say $20 million annually. That's what it would
and
have
then
to
be. Or just renounce him and get rid of him.
Sure.
Which they're not going
to
do.
Which they're not going to do. But, like, I think, you know, that brings it back to the Kings point you talked about. They do have cap space, $35 million projected in cap space.
Wow.
If they renounce all their cap-hold free agents, which would include Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
So suddenly they're a team where I wonder, you know, could they be a Draymond team? Like, hey, come to Sacramento from Golden State.
Oh my
or
God.
Who else could they
be
pursuing?
That's a weird fit for him because Sabonis is also a stand on the key guy.
But it works with Looney. It's just that when you have Looney and Draymond, you have Steph and Clay and all those guys. But I wonder who it could be. Like maybe
Could that be? I have a name for you.
Who's
Didn't
that?
They try to sign Zach LaVine once?
Hmm. Zach LaVine would be interesting. Yeah, they did try for him, but I don't love that backcourt necessarily. It's smaller.
Yeah.
Before
trying to
trade,
think who else?
How about Jeremy Grant? Somebody like that.
Chris Middleton? Just opted out.
What if you really overpay for Brooke Lopez?
With Sabonis?
A big overpay. Yeah, like if he's getting
Shores
offers,
up the rim protection,
yeah.
Right?
And he's in the 2008 draft. I get a little nervous.
I know,
with
he's
Brooke.
Older.
He's not
how
a
about
young
Kuzma?
Dude.
Could they be a Kuzma team?
Oh, that feels
yeah.
Kingsy.
Kuzma
yeah.
feels
that
like
feels
he would take Sacramento Kingsy. Just to get back to California.
They could also be a just trade for somebody else's asset team, right?
For sure.
Like get like a DeAndre Hunter. Wasn't there rumors about him?
with I thought that was Hunter Rumors with somebody.
Well, maybe. They have Griffin behind him too, right? So if they feel good about AJ Griffin,
Austin Reeves, maybe that's an Austin Reeves team. I don't know.
My guy. Yeah, that could be it.
There it is.
Yeah. KOC.
But the point is, like, for a Kings team that just had their best season in two decades, that now they have an option to even get better. I think with Harrison Barnes, he's solid, but you can find upgrades from him in this free agent class.
I agree. It seemed like Barnes was a little bit of a leader on that team and just a good locker room guy and all that stuff.
He was just the adult in the room.
Yeah, but at the same time, you can find Harrison Barnes.
Or you could re-sign him to, you know, 10-ish, 12-ish million, depending on what his market is, and still have cap space for a $20-plus million guy.
I think he'd be a really appealing mid-level guy for somebody.
Yeah, like $12
million. If he's a $12 million veteran, been in some big games. On the flip side, OKC trades up to 10.
Man. Love OKC.
And weird. I think this was my single favorite move. I just continue to be so impressed by the Zombie Sonics, how over and over again, and it feels like they have a type. They're like your buddy that you see certain people that they're with, and you're like, ah, oh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's his type. Mm-hmm. OKC likes these guys who they know how to, they're super competitive, and they know how to handle the basketball, and that's their type. And now they're going to have SGA, and they're going to have Wallace, and they're going to have Josh Giddey, who's not even 21 yet.
I mean,
their backcourt, like, that's it. You don't even, you know, you barely need anything else. Holmgren, my guy Jalen Williams, my favorite.
They make it look simple too, right?
That's just over and over again.
Yeah, that's the most annoying part about OKC. You're like, of course, right? When they take Case and Wallace, I mean, I even said to you, KOC, he'd be great in Dallas, right? I mean,
for sure.
He's such a good player. I feel like, you know, he's a top seven, top five type talent in this draft. And now he's going to end up in OKC with a lot of talent, young talent around him, and a lot of opportunity right behind SGA, which is going to be great for that second unit.
Like, they're going to have a good playmaker on the floor 48 minutes.
Right.
Every single minute.
And they have cap space.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a team that could also just say, fuck it. We talked about this on one of the pods a couple weeks ago. Like, if I'm OKC, I'm like, why not?
Yeah.
Like, after Denver, like, whatever spot in the pecking order is sitting there, and they were a 500 team last year. Anyway, Giddey's a year older, Williams a year older. Now you're adding Chet back. They probably need some sort of big guy to put with Chet. It's a little
again,
rim protection.
Brook Lopez. Like, he's the guy I'm obsessed with. Like, who's gonna pay offer Brook Lopez a significant contract offer to try to pull him away from Milwaukee? I don't know who it's gonna be. I don't know if it will be anybody, but I just think he's the guy. You talk about Chet, you don't want him to get, you know, defend Jokic and defend Steven Adams and all these tough interior centers. Well, put him off Paul. You know, have him in the Time Lord Rob Williams role where he's kind of roaming and defending and blocking shots. And then have Brook Lopez. I'm with you, Bill, that OKC, they have all this good young talent. They were in the play-in conversation there last season.
And they
have
a top 10 guy.
Yes, they do with SGA, who could propel himself into, you know, actual MVP conversation, not just all NBA. And if you really go pedal the metal with free agency here, you still have your young core. The guys you add in free agency, it's not like they affect you long-term if they're short 1-, 2-, 3-year contracts. I think OKC should go for it and be aggressive because they get a lot of talent that's ready to blossom. And we can't also forget.
New team for you, Tate?
Yeah, I mean, I like OKC.
Now that you're breaking up with Charlotte? No,
I'm not breaking up. I'm hurt, but we're going to be all right. But yeah, I like OKC. I like the fit. And I like that Cason Wallace is going to go to a team that's going to lean into who he is and let him be who he is. And I think Shea will be a great mentor for him. You know what I mean? That's the craziest part about OKC is, like, Shea's at the point where he's a first team All NBA guy. Yeah. It feels like he just got in the league.
Right.
And that's how quickly, like you said, it's time to actually formulate and make a team that can actually contend. Stop stashing all the picks. Stop waiting. Let's go.
So why wasn't Kentucky better last year?
Well,
like, what's the 20-second answer to that?
Well, Oscar Tshiebwe could not handle a double team, and that's, you know, why he's, you know, we'll see if he gets
why
drafted
he's not
tonight,
been drafted
but
yet.
He was the reigning, you know, national player of the year coming into the year. A lot of hype around this team, but he also had a weird knee injury that they were covering up at the start of the year. But yeah, not being able to pass out of double teams. We could talk to Kyle Mann about that. He was very frustrated, but yeah.
All year long, Kyle was so frustrated.
Yeah, that's
Kentucky.
A short answer. Blame Oscar.
I don't like taking a big guy in the top 15 unless it's either a bad draft or I think he has a chance to be like a really, really above average starter. Where Dallas took Derek Lively, which is like, oh, he makes sense. We need size. I just think it's so easy to find centers They're all over the place. Like Detroit has seven of them, you know? And you look at the next couple guys, like Grady Dick, Hawkins, who I think Tate and I like more than KSC, mm-hmm. Kobe, Keontae George, then Jalen Hood-Schifino. All of those guys, I think, are guys who have a chance to be
a lot of great picks in that range.
Really, really good perimeter mm-hmm. guys, which is way harder to find than a big guy. You know, the way the league is now, you can't play two big guys together really ever. You know, you have 48 minutes, and I just feel like there's a glut. I didn't like what they did. If I'm them, I think I would have stayed at 10 and taken Wallace.
It's a risk. I mean, I like if Lively's not good early on, I mean, it's going to look very bad. I just think it's an upside play for them at 12.
Would you rather stay at 10 and just take him Wallace if you're them?
Wallace is less of a project.
I mean, if let's say they stay at 10 and take Wallace, then, you know, they don't have the ability to go get 24 and they don't have the ability to go get Omax Prosper.
All right. So let's say they go backwards and just take Grady Dick.
I don't like the Grady Dick fit for them.
Hawkins?
No.
Mm-mm. Kobe?
I mean, they needed a big. And like, I know you don't.
I don't like drafting for need in the lottery.
But it's not just need. It is. Because
I feel like Orlando did that too, where they're like, let's take one more crack at a point guard here.
Need factors into the equation of best player available. Like Lively was a top high school recruit.
And him being number one in his class. Yes. I feel like at some level, they go back to like Neanderthal brain and they're like, he's number one in his class.
He's bad,
he's 12th on the board.
Maybe he had a bad relationship, something weird happened.
And all the things that he doesn't do well, it matters less with Luka. As long as he can set good screens, roll hard to the rim, catch lobs, those are the things we know Lively can do. It's just a matter of how ready is he going to be to defend at a quality level in the NBA. Can he help that Mavs defense?
So you had
probably
15th.
Not. Yeah, probably not as a rookie. But you know, maybe year two, year three, you hope you get better out of him.
I don't know if I'm Dallas and I have Luka and I'm going to bring back Kyrie. I don't need a project as my big man.
I better
make sure that dude can play. I just don't have a lot of faith in Dallas's decision-making. I thought the Kyrie trade was just reckless.
They've made mistakes every single year.
Other than the Luka trade, which was incredible, I just don't agree with stuff they do. And I don't think this was a great thing for them either. On the flip side, OKC. I mean, if you just told me in a vacuum, OKC and Dallas is going to make a trade, who do you think will win the trade? I'd be like, gee, I wonder. Is it the most competent franchise we have in the draft or the other team? Some other fun stuff from the draft tonight. The Twins went back to back. When I was growing up, we had the Thompson Twins who sang Hold Me Now. I played You Hold Me Now and Doctor Doctor. I can't say they were smash hits back in the 80s. But
Hold Me Now, you hear.
Hold Me Now
and
was
you're
a
like,
real song.
Okay,
yeah. And it was in one of the 80s movies. Amon went 4 to Houston. Asar, help me with my speech dyslexia.
That's good.
Asar.
That's good.
That was
I got
great.
It. I nailed it. He went 5th to Detroit, twin brothers back-to-back. So Asar was the better shooter, better defender, and was the MVP in the bogus league they were in.
Finals MVP.
Amen was the better athlete, more explosive, upside guy. And you guys were split on who you liked more. So Tate, what was your case?
I just like that Amon had more of a branding potential. I think you're kind of either
name.
One. You know what I mean? I like the name better. I think you can do more with that. So if I'm a Nike, Adidas, whoever he signs with, probably Nike. But, you know, you can roll with that. And I also like that he averaged 9.2 assists. So I like that he's a playmaker. Oh. And the shot that his brother hit to win finals MVP and to win the championship was a pass from Amon. So I like that he's a little selfless, you know, in this world that we like to give credit to the playmakers, right? We like talking about Jokic, LeBron. I like that Amon is okay to, you know, defer to his brother.
It's close. I mean, I had them 4 or 5 back-to-back. Asar,
you
slight
had it
edge.
Right.
You know, I had Asar, you know, on my board one ahead. But, like, mock draft was right. But I think with Asar, he just has the better shooting ability. His shot mechanics through the pre-draft process and last year with OTE came along much more than Amen's did. And I think maybe this is, like, a little bit of, like, nature-nurture in the sense that now they're falling in different situations that work for them, though. Like with Amen, he's in a situation where they need that primary ball handler. So those are the things that he's done his whole life. That's what he's done the best.
I can't wait till you're finished with this because I have a lot of thoughts. Keep going.
And but then in Detroit, you got Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, and now you plug in Asar, who's been playing off of his brother for a long time now. I think it makes sense where they ended up going. I just think Ausar gets the slight edge overall just because he does. He's better at defense, better at shooting, and I still think he has some untapped potential as an on-ball guy as well, that he's only flashed because he's been the second one behind his brother.
This reminds me of when they did those experiments in the 50s with twins, when they would just put them in two different situations, and one was a great situation and the other one was a bad situation. What you laid out for Ausar, like, if Cade's back, which I assume he's back, and they just tank the season and he'll be 100% healthy, and he's got Jaden Ivey.
I like that backcourt.
And they have a bunch of big guys, right?
It's an easy fit for him.
Yeah. He can just kind of slide in and do the things.
He can float
do
a
blue guy
bit.
Stuff,
yeah.
And kind of pick his spots. His brother goes to Houston, which is a whole team of like these offense first, whoever gets the ball over half court gets to run the rest of the play and take a shot. I think that's, you know, Udoka's there and maybe he'll hit people with the ruler and the newspaper every once in a while. But I just don't like the team. Who's going to make him better? Like, if they don't sign James Harden, and there's a lot of buzz now that Harden's going to go back to Philly. So unless they get Fred VanVleet or some other free agent point guard, or they trade for somebody, this is going to be a whoever gets the ball over half court gets to shoot team.
Amen's going to have to be the guy to change things there. He's going to have to be the culture
changer. He's
19,
though.
I know. Yeah, like, well, I mean,
and
like,
Jalen Green
20 now.
Thinks he's the guy who's going to be the guy who, you know, I don't like the situation for him.
I think with Amen, situation-wise for basketball, like, they need, this is what they need. So that part makes sense. But situation-wise, in terms of culture, it's a lot on his shoulders. And he's going to have to be the guy to settle this offense down, get them into sets, you know, have Jalen Green be in his place as more of the off-ball guy, the secondary creator. And then you draft Cam Whitmore on top of this with the 20th pick. It could be a major steal. But he at Villanova last year, I mean, he was ball stopper.
Yeah.
And so I think with Houston, I'd be shocked at this point if they acquired James Harden. This, like, both of these picks are two raw players. They're not ready to win yet. This team is going to probably struggle again unless they, you know, do something unexpected in free agency.
I also like the rivalry between, you know, Cade and Jalen Green have that rivalry going, but now you have the Twins on different teams, and you got Detroit versus Houston. Maybe the Twins turn on each other, right? We're used to, like, the Morris Twins, where they're, like, kind of, they're in line, right? And it's crazy that they were drafted 12 years ago in 2011. It doesn't feel that long ago, but to maybe have a rivalry between the Twins, even though they're so connected, I think that would be a fun storyline. I think Houston's fun, and I think Cam Whitmore, I thought that they liked him at 4. So to get him and Amen Thompson, I mean...
I don't want to make it sound like I'm criticizing Houston, because these are two great picks.
And they're the youngest team,
I just think you almost like have to start over with what you conceive of this team. And Kyle, turn the TikTok camera on. What's my camera? This one? James Harden. If you go sign with Houston, if you go sign and play with this team of young guys who are like years away from doing anything, I think we should revoke your Hall of Fame membership. Because don't you want to try to make a run at trying to win the finals or win the title? This is it. You go there, you're just like the old guy. And you're just kind of fading into the rest of your career. Like, he doesn't want to try to get back to the finals, be in a good team.
Maybe he's willing to be a local hero instead of a national hero. You know what I mean? He's willing to be a Houston hero forever, right? Maybe that's his play. I don't know. I don't know what James
Harden
has in his heart.
It's like Kobe doing that last Lakers contract. But Kobe won 5 titles. He could do the last Lakers contract for $80 million for 2 years because he'd already won.
Well, and it was kind of like a tank contract at some level, right?
Yeah.
It was like, Kobe deserves all this money,
and
then we'll go get the young
players. Do your retirement tour
right.
And the whole thing.
Exactly.
James Harden hasn't done anything. So there's no way he can go to Houston now. You seem like you're more skeptical than
me. No, I think it would be, I'd be shocked if he went back at this point. After this draft, they draft Amen Thompson.
And if I'm Houston, what do I want James Harden for? Now right. I have all these young guys.
Yeah, you have all these.
We stumbled
handlers.
Into this Cam Whitmore miracle, assuming he doesn't have some issue that we're not finding out about. But they get a guy who was being bet pretty heavily to be a top 10 pick, who was being rumored as high as 4. He goes to 20. It's an absolute bizarre event. Miami passes on him.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken every chip on the shoulder, a guy who's fallen in the draft last 30 years.
It's overall a good night for the Rockets.
Totally.
You know, you get a high upside guy with Amen who could end up being, you know, behind Victor, the best player in the class. Like, he has that upside.
He could be your number one option in the future, like an actual franchise cornerstone.
So you have him and you have Jalen Green.
Cam Whitmore, a finisher.
Right.
Yep.
Him, Jalen Green, and Whitmore, hopefully. Our guy, Şengün.
Jabari Smith.
Jabari Smith.
Tari Eason. They have a ton of talent.
Yeah, I kind of like that Houston team.
And they're young. Like, they're young, and guess what Ime's going to do? Ime's going to come in and say, we play defense. Mm-hmm. We're going to work on the defensive end, and if you don't, I bench you. I don't care about, you know, what you expect to do here. I think that's going to be fascinating, too. And the FGAs on this team is going to be fascinating. Who's taking the most shots? I think that is what I'm looking at the start of the season. I'm looking straight at FGAs. Who expects to be the number one guy? Because I think Jalen Green, the best version of himself, is being the number two guy on a winning team, not the number one guy. And I'm not sure he's willing to accept that because he obviously had a problem going number two when K was number
one. Right. Mm-hmm. All right, so what's like the crunch time five of the Rockets? Jabari?
Şengün?
Şengün, Jabari, Jalen Green.
Green.
Whitmore, and then Thompson.
Thompson's like that, basically your point guard, your initiator.
But if it's not...
So he can be like the point forward, basically.
Right.
If it's not... But like, I think what's interesting about them is they also have the ability to play smaller. You could go with a Smith Eason front court. You have Garuba, underrated center, that they have as well coming off their bench. So I think they have so much flexibility with lineups that for...
Kyle, turn the TikTok camera on again. James Harden, I think this might be a good move. This team has a lot of talent. They might have a lot of fun on this team.
Young talent.
I'm back in on the Rockets. This sounds great. They just need a distributor who can take everyone in the club after.
Show them around town.
The Thompson twins looked like they were... came out of central casting. Like, they were like All-American season four. They're just like two handsome guys. I'm with Tate. I hope they feud. I hope there's some sort of some sort of clothesline, and I hope Asar is just pissed off.
I mean, Robin and Brooke kind of pick on each other, but it's always good fun, you know? But I feel like a real rivalry where Jalen Green like tries to get Amin to talk bad about the Pistons and his brother, like that's what we want.
Or maybe we'll end up with a trade where Detroit trades the other twin back to Houston for Jalen Green, something like that. We can get the twins reunited.
Wow, Cade and Jalen together.
That, yeah, a couple of years from now, that'd be something.
Let's take one more break. So one of the things that's been really hard to adjust to in the summer of 2023 is Washington might be competent and intelligent. Something that certainly hasn't been the case since I was a young child living in Brookline, Massachusetts. They flip spots with Indiana, and they get Coulibaly, my French hero, who's grew a foot when he was 19. I'm always in, just blind.
He was 5'11", he grew to 6'8".
That's like if you're like, hey, I'm thinking about getting a spicy margarita with jalapeno. I'm like, in, just blind. I need no more information. The guy, the defensive long-armed guy who grew a foot when he was 19, I'm always in, like, prove to me that guy's not going to make it. Washington says, fuck it. This is perfect. We're tanking anyway. We just got Jordan Poole today. He's going to take 30 shots a game. We're going to do Tyus Jones. We're going to audition him for 3 months and then hopefully try to trade him for 2 picks. And then we take this French guy who will have no impact on us whatsoever this year other than defensive intangible stuff, but long-term, really might be something. And I can't tell if this is a Ewing theory right away team or not. We don't, I asked you this question last night. Are we sure the Wizards aren't going to be good right away?
You're kind of on that. Like, you think the Wizards could be better than expected.
I really like the backcourt. Tyus Jones and Monte Morris are two legit point guards that can, you know, the first and second unit are going to be organized. They're going to play good, solid basketball. They're going to make the right decisions. They're going to be in the right spots. I think Tyus Jones could be like a most improved type candidate, right? Just with the opportunity.
Jordan Poole as well. Both of them could be. I mean, Tyus Jones has wanted to be a starter for a long time, and he's flourished whenever he got the opportunities, and Jordan Poole is going to get 25 shots per game. Like, he's going to put up big numbers on offense. It's just a matter of everything else. But I like what they've done. I mean, they get 8 second-round picks, 4 first-round swaps, 1 protected first, Jordan Poole, Tyus Jones, Landry Shamet for Beal and Porzingis. That's not a bad haul.
And 100 pick swaps.
Yeah, like, that's not bad considering the circumstances with Beal having the no trade. And
you could replace Beal's offense with Poole. Yeah. Beal was 23 a game last year. It wasn't like he was lighting it up.
He wasn't the 30-point-per-game guy we saw, you know,
He has been a guy for two years.
And now they got Coulibaly, who, I mean, like, for him with the Mets 92 this past season, he starts the year on their junior team, and he's doing a ton of on ball. Yeah. He's scoring, he's playing, running pick and roll, isolating, and he looks smooth doing it. And then he's playing a 3-and-D role next to Wemby and doing that at a high level as a defensive stopper.
And Wemby came over for a freaky handshake with him where he took his giant, massive hands and just tried. Everybody who tried to shake hands or do a high five with Wemby, it actually seemed terrifying.
Right. It was like he took over his arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had his arm halfway up mm-hmm. Adam Silver's forearm on a handshake. I've never seen anything like
that.
And
I've never seen Adam Silver that happy. He's like, finally. He's like, this is what I've been looking for.
This is great. My guy. This is my LeBron.
It was like Russillo when he saw Chris Paul. You know what I mean? He's like, pulls him closer.
So what, they move up a spot, give up a couple second rounders. Indiana moves back a spot and takes Walker from Houston. Getting a whiff of... Smells a little busty, this pick. I hope he makes it. I hope all these guys make it. But this is the one. It's like, what's his position? It's like, well, he averaged 11-7 in college. Oh, cool. 11-7. Can't believe he was able to pull that off. He's 6'7". Feels like he's in that kind of Brandon Clark, Grant Williams,
kind
PJ
of a tweener.
Tucker.
Yeah.
Not really sure what his position is. A gamer. Everybody talks about, gamer, competitive. I just don't know if I want to spend the 8th pick on that KOC.
I think it's fair to question that at the 8th pick. I would have taken Taylor Hendricks instead. I think Hendricks is the better prospect.
So you went
than
9
Walker.
To Utah.
Yes, and Utah, one of the big winners of the draft. But I think for Indiana, with what they did there, you're betting that he can do more of what he did in high school, which was more on ball with his size at 6'7", 250 pounds. He was a pull-up guy from mid-range. He's shown the ability to be a catch-and-shoot guy from three. So for Indiana, I would imagine they're thinking, we have Miles Turner at the 5, Jairus Walker at the 4, two guys who can be good defenders and can space the floor on offense so they can play 5 out.
How about
trading
back and getting them?
I don't know if they could have.
Moved back 4 spots.
I don't know if they could have.
He's the 10th guy in 2022 in the ESPN Top 100, Tate.
Yeah, and I felt like Houston, they were so good, and everyone wanted to find the reason why. And Sasser ends up going in the first round, so that makes a lot of sense, Marcus Sasser.
To the Pistons.
Right, but Walker was the 4th option on this team. But granted, in some of their best games for Houston, he stepped up and was important for them and was able to show some of that scoring punch and that creator ability. But in general, I just felt like everyone wanted Houston to have a one-and-done guy. Jairus Walker checked a lot of boxes, and then you start putting these mock drafts together. He's 250. He's got a lot of girth to him, right? I mean, I could see him sliding down to the 5 and guarding a center if he had to, just because of his size, but it might be a bit of a reach.
And then they added Ben Shepherd with the 26th pick and Julian Strother with the 29th pick. So they added two shooters in the late first round. It's pretty clear what they're trying to do is that's surround Halliburton with these versatile pieces and targets for him to find. And I think what they're doing makes some sense, even though with Walker, I do wonder about the upside compared to some of the guys taken behind him. But I think he's going to be solid at the least.
Oh, I hope so. He's the 8th pick.
Well, very Pacers to take these college players. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's kind of like a traditional thing that they would do anyway. So I mean, it makes sense with those. I like Strother a lot.
Yeah,
I mean,
good.
He had a big shot there for Gonzaga in the tournament too against UCLA.
And Shepherd was a riser through the draft combine process out of Belmont. Yep. Yep. I mean, he's like a Alec Burks type, Quentin Grimes, solid player.
We have Toronto with Grady Dick at 13, where there was a TikTok video of him of his freshman year. He had this suit. It's almost like he was so weird. I'm kind of into it.
Yeah.
It was one weird thing with him. There's 7. And, it seemed like his family dynamic was pretty normal. So it was like, maybe he's trying to get some attention.
I like American guys that have confidence, you know what I mean? Because I feel like Tyler Hero, for example, even if it's weird and he's kind of an alien, I like that he has the confidence.
Yeah.
And I think Grady Dick kind of falls in line there where you don't quite understand it. It's a little bit, you're like, what's happening here? But he believes it. He leans into it. He went to Kansas with a lot of talent around him, Jalen Wilson, for example, and he got shots. I mean, he got opportunities. He wasn't afraid of the moment, and he stepped up immediately. So
Smart enough to grow the little chin thing.
Right. He needs to be a little bit
do that
weird.
Right away so you don't look like Opie and
Can't
Happy
Can't be
days.
Too clean cut.
Yeah.
One of the things that bothered me about Grady Dick at Kansas was that offense. I forget the game, who the opponent was, but he's just stationary in the corner. There's no movement. And I think with Toronto, it's going to be the opposite. You have a new coach who, really likes these modernized motion concepts, and you have Scotty Barnes. Maybe you keep Pascal Siakam. They're going to be running so much movement for Grady Dick in Toronto that he wasn't able to do in Kansas, especially the Barnes Dick, that 2-man game between them. I think it's a great pick for them at 13, and I'm excited to see what their new coach does.
And they need shooting, right? I mean, that's really the main thing. So they got, I considered the best shooter in the draft in Grady Dick.
two of my favorite guys. Well, I love Jordan Hawkins. We talked about him yep. before. I just love that guy. Goes to the worst possible team for him. He goes to New Orleans. They're just loaded with perimeter guys. He's got CJ McCollum right in front of him, who's going to play 30 plus minutes a game. Trey Murphy, who I think everybody really likes. Love even he him. Didn't get enough shots. You also have Ingram and Zion. It's a team that seems like Zion's staying. It's a team that seems to have some urgency toward proving something, and I just don't feel like he's going to play.
I hope Willie Green adapts, because with Trey Murphy, Pelicans fans all season long were frustrated with his usage. He took like 6 threes per game, even though he's a 40-plus percent guy, nasty off screens and everything, like movement shots. He was unbelievable. The last month of the season, that pretty much doubled. He was like 10, 11 three-point shots per game. So if that's an indicator of Willie Green, you know, saying, hey, we're going to start taking more threes with our amazing three-point shooters, then maybe Jordan Hawkins becomes a weapon. But they were 29th in attempts. Yeah. It took a long time for them to get going with Trey Murphy. I would hope that that's a lesson for how they need to use Hawkins to get the most out of him.
And he is a specialist, right? I mean, he can come in and kind of fit a role immediately where they're like, you're our three-point specialist. We're going to throw you into games like Duncan Robinson to be this threat. We're going to chase you around screens.
Yep.
We're going to let you have a green light when you're out there, but you're going to have limited minutes. And based on if you're hot or not, that's how much of a leash we give you. So I can see the fit a little bit there. But like you said, there's a backlog in the backcourt. And I mean, even like Alvarado, I mean, some of these guys that you're just like, they have to be out there at some level. I just think that takes minutes away from him.
Are you in the Hawkins club with me?
I'm in the Hawkins club. I mean, okay. I like winners KSC, and I like shooters.
He hit in 29th.
I felt bad for him, though.
I don't want to be in the club.
Yeah, well, KSC's out. You're not invited.
They compared him to Ray Allen, and they showed the Ray Allen shot in the finals. And like, oh my God. They were setting him up. You know, I didn't like that. That got me a little scared.
The ESPN draft, I just don't know. They barely talk basketball. They had these Pajimski. Crazy comparisons.
They go talk Chris Paul trade, right?
right. Poor Pod.
Yeah, they have Hawkins. They're comparing to Rip Hamilton and Ray Allen.
Rip Hamilton's
two UConn
little,
guys.
Rip Hamilton's good.
Fair.
Yeah. But I'm saying it started with Rip Hamilton. It's like, all right, UConn guy moves, cuts. And then it's like, and then Ray Allen is the other guy. It's like, what? Settle down, Ray Allen.
And it wasn't even awesome. Shades of. It was like, this is who we expect him to be. Yeah. And it was literally the shot he hit with the Miami Heat.
Oh, my God. Ray Allen was awesome his whole career.
Yeah. Ray Allen was a 25-point-per-game guy with the Supersonics.
He also dunking.
Ray Allen was always good. And it was in He Got Game. Mm-hmm. The ESPN, whatever they did this year with the tables, with the family. So each guy got picked and we had to watch them hug 12 people and then walk up to the stage, hug Adam Silver. Then we would have the how does it feel interview. And I was just like, can we just talk basketball? Like, what did Indiana just do? Why is Cam Whitmore falling? Mm-hmm. Please explain this Dallas thing to
didn't
me.
Didn't even ask Cam Whitmore about how he felt about falling, right? I mean, they just said, how's it feel to get drafted? It's like, well, you expected to get drafted in the top 5, top 10.
Yeah, Cam, now are you fucking, 20th. Did What's you think about on? Leaving?
You must have a major chip on your shoulder tonight, Cam.
Of course.
Huh?
Like, are you going to do the Draymond thing where you remember every pick in front
of you?
Cam
Whitmore, once he fell past 10, it became the biggest story in the draft. Like, what's going on with this guy? And we've heard, like, does he have a medical issue?
I heard his coach didn't really stick up for him.
Yeah, you know, did his coach badmouth him? What is it? But to go from, I'm going to go between 4 and 10 to I am now available in this Lakers, Miami, Golden State. Are you fucking kidding me? They're going to get Cam Whitmore and none of them take him? And in the draft, it was like barely a conversation. I don't blame the people on the draft. That's the producers. And I've worked some of these shows. The producers, they just want to steer toward the human elements.
Right.
And all that stuff.
They like to
ask
why you're crying instead of being like, you know, what do you like about your fit? I mean, at least they asked Pajimski about, you know, playing with Steph Curry. That was one good example after they ignored that he played at Santa Clara.
He said he wanted to go against them. And now I'll get to play with him.
Right.
That
was
a
good one.
Yeah. So so the Lakers get Jalen Hood-Sifino
out of Indiana. Yep.
And this is a classic, just knows how to play, fun to play with guy. The kind of guy that LeBron usually succeeds with. Now, we don't know how long LeBron's going to be with the Lakers. Could be just this year and who knows after that. But this is the type of guy, the high hoops IQ guy that would fit. I really like that pick. I was bummed out because he was him and Hawkins, I think, were the two I was kind of hoping would drop to the Celtics. You like that pick too, right?
I like it a lot for them. It feels like a good pick for with LeBron and then potentially post LeBron.
Yeah, might take a year. The 20-year-old point guard's not really a huge success rate for them playing on good teams. You liked him too, Tate?
I love his pull-up game. I love his mid-range game. Mm-hmm. I love that he played with Woody and within the context of that Indiana team. Trayce Jackson-Davis was the primary guy. He was able to slot in and fit in. And there was a point in the season where Indiana fans were saying, is he our best player on the team? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's how good he was. And
fast.
Right. And I think it's a great opportunity for him. And even if he goes to South Bay and is like the primary scorer and able, you know, gets his sea legs in the league, I think that'd be great.
He
for
just
him
needs
too.
To improve as a shooter to play with LeBron, because he was 30% on catch and shoot threes last year. So like, I think you're betting on him.
He's better off the dribble than he is catch and shoot.
Mid-range.
And
free
LeBron's
throw line.
More, I need catch and shoot guys. That's the only red
flag. And so I think there's at least the positive indicators. He's got good touch. He's good from mid-range, good from the free throw line. Maybe he, you know, for the Lakers, they feel good about what they saw in workouts for him to be an off-ball guy with LeBron James.
Well, he's also a trade asset if they decide to do anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that's somebody you could move. And then Golden State, they get the Santa Clara kid who Russillo loved. I just shout out to Russillo because he gets Chris Paul, his favorite guy to the Warriors.
That was awesome.
His second favorite guy is Steph Curry. And then the Santa Clara guy was his favorite guy in the draft out of the lottery. And that guy's going there too. So he might move. He might be on his way living
he's
in
going
Oakland
to the Bay.
Or Berkeley. He might be living in Berkeley.
My next chapter.
Just do a player tribute.
Move in with Logan Murdoch.
He could maybe move in with Logan. But this was in your draft guide comp, you compared him to DDV, which is funny because they're going to lose DDV because he's going to sign somewhere. And I don't know. Can this kid play right away for them?
I think so.
He's 20.
I mean, he deserves the opportunity to play right away. And like maybe you have too many ball handlers, you know, Chris Paul now, Stephen Curry, where you're just not going to have the minutes and the opportunity for him. But I think he's going to get an opportunity because he's not just – I mean, the difficult part for Steve Kerr with these other young guys, Wiseman, Kuminga, Poole, was the lack of feel. He couldn't trust them on defense, couldn't trust them to make the right decisions. You're going to have Podzimski come in right away with a high IQ. He knows how
so
to play within
a system.
Hoops
IQ, shooter,
yes.
Scrappy guy.
Shoots, can move without the ball.
So why did he go 20 or 19?
And he's 6'4". You know, he played at Santa Clara, I think, with other teams.
Like,
I think the reason why he maybe fell a little bit was because, you know, he was at Illinois and he was playing behind guys like TJ Shannon, who goes back to Illinois. And then he goes to a mid-major in the WCC. Granted, he was the WCC player of the year. So it's not like he was, you know, he was great in the WCC. But maybe that's a knock where at a high major level, he had some trouble with the competition. Mm. He goes to low major. He's great. But, I mean, Santa Clara back-to-back years where they have first-round guys.
Unbelievable.
I mean, that's
it's pretty amazing.
Well, last year's guy was the steal of the draft.
Exactly. Yep. So that's encouraging.
And Podzimski could be, too. I mean, like, he has the qualities to be a steal. My favorite stat about him is, like, even though there's questions about his defense, like 6'4", that is, you know, why teams might bet against him. 8.8 rebounds per game at 6'4". Like, this guy is like,
and averages two steals a game. He's very active.
What did his dad say? He said, "Oh, what are you going to get from your son? Oh, he's got a dog in him."
He went to military school. Yeah. We had two great dad interviews.
You ask him to jump, he doesn't say how high. He just does it.
Yep. That was the dad interview of the night. The Scoot's dad was great. We had some good dad interviews, but that one, that guy got me fired up. I was like, this guy's going to make it.
Yeah, right.
Look at his dad. He's a badass.
Yeah, he was like, give me that microphone.
He's like, shut up, son. So then the draft pretty much dropped off a cliff after Cam Whitmore. Then it started to feel like a normal NBA draft where
got
people
the coach
taking
interviews
flyers
and all that. Yeah.
But Cam Whitmore at Houston, I gotta say, Houston, you gotta be feeling great. You get basically two top 10 talents at number 4 and number 20. You don't have to trade, you don't do anything. I like it.
If you looked at those two guys, you would think it was the Magic that got a guy at 6 and 11, right, with that talent, right? And to get them at 4 and 20 is pretty insane.
We didn't talk about Utah. Just let's do them just quickly, and then we'll start wrapping up. They get Hendricks at 9, and they get George at 16. And they struck oil with Walker Kessler last year. They struck oil with Markkanen. I like Agbaji. Am I screwing that up?
Ochai Agbaji.
Yeah, Agbaji.
Most outstanding player.
I'm saying the name's right,
champion.
And I have so little faith in myself.
No, it's all right.
I feel like I'm screwing the name up.
I feel like
up.
The NBA just keeps bringing in players for you, too. They're like, here's this guy, Podzimski.
Utah's the big winner. They're the big winner.
The big winner. Yeah, that's your number one?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Because you got Taylor Hendricks at 9, number 6 player on my board. He's going to like 40% shooter from 3, versatile defender. Now you pair him with Walker Kessler, who's already an awesome rim protector, and Lauri Markkanen. You get size in that front court. You have shooting. You have versatility. And then you add Keyonte George, who, like, we watched him this past year at Baylor. He's a score first guy, but he has some good moments as a playmaker, good moments on defense. I just think this Jazz team, what they're building moving forward, George is going to have the opportunity to be the engine of a really versatile team with a bunch of different weapons and different lineups they can put together. And that's what you want in the NBA is versatility, not just from like a positional standpoint, but for a coach, versatility with the lineups that you can put on the floor. And Utah has that with the guys that they drafted and are adding to the roster that they had already.
And Keontae George is a lottery guy. So to get him at 16, I mean, that's a win.
They have Jordan Clarkson, who we didn't mention. They have Olynyk, who we didn't mention, and Colin Sexton. Just a lot of good guys who can handle the ball and put the ball in the basket. Big guys, interchangeable dudes.
And last year, they started out so hot, they almost got ahead of schedule, right? They got people on the scent, and then they had to chill out a little bit. So.
I mean, and like we talked about Oklahoma City being a team to try to take a leap. What about Utah? They have $40-plus million in cap space. Could they be a team that tries to go, you know, improve quickly and try to be a top four, top five seed in the
West?
Who
is that then? I still wonder what's going to happen with Chris Middleton. Not that they'd need him, but he's the fact that he opted out. And I was talking to somebody about this today. Like, if you're Milwaukee, like, Chris Middleton is a, are we sure he's ever going to be healthy again guy for me? Like, has he looked the same since the finals?
No.
This is now two straight years of, what am I getting? He's a little older. Like, they put a lot of miles on him in that final season. And I was surprised he opted out, which makes me wonder if he has somewhere he thinks he can go.
Maybe he want. I mean, if he stays in Milwaukee, it's probably about getting the long-term security. But for another team, like if you're Utah, San Antonio, Houston, OKC, Detroit, teams with cap space, I wouldn't really want to pay Chris Middleton personally. So I think I'd expect him to go back to Milwaukee on a longer term deal. Mm. The most recent pick that just came in, just have to point it out, Leonard Miller going to the Spurs with the 33rd pick.
What?
Miller's a guy that, you know, I had in my top 20, a ton of draft analysts had in their top 20. Played this past season for the G League, and it was up and down for him, but the last month plus, he was absolutely unbelievable. Versatile on defense, pulling up from mid-range, scoring around the rim, making, you know, slick passes. I like that pick with what they already have. With Wemby in the front court, you can put Miller at the four, Vassell, Keldon Johnson, Jeremy Sochan. Like, they have so much versatility around Wemby. Mm. Like, we talk, like, this is a theme, like, so much size. They are one of those teams that I think can play with five guys where your smallest guy is 6'7", 6'8". And that's what it seems like the Spurs are kind of, you know, angling towards right now.
You know, when Wemby started crying when he got interviewed after the draft, I didn't want to blow it for Tate, but Tate also started sobbing. I didn't realize you were such a crier.
Right. It felt like
I didn't realize you were so emotional.
It was like Anthony Davis again. You know what I mean? Like, not to say Brandon Miller is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I hope he's not. Yeah. But it felt the same where you just see this. You see this guy, you know you're going to be watching in the finals at some point, and then you look at your guy and you're saying, he just said it's about to be a movie in Charlotte, so I hope it's a good movie.
So there's three teams left. Portland goes third, and your team is still on the board. Mm-hmm. You have a 50% chance.
Oh yeah,
at a life altering guy.
And you're thinking about this. Jordan is huge in Paris, right? I mean, he literally, the PSG team is Jordan Brand. He goes over to Paris all the time. North Carolina, historically, colonial times, we were cool with the French, right? Lafayette, shout out to him. We've tried to build this. We gave Nick Batum half the money in the city of Charlotte.
Yeah.
We had Tony Parker. We had Boris Diaw with the Bobcats, right? We've done all of our French.
You put in your time
with
the French.
We put in our network. And we put our chips on the table. We're trying to sell. This is the time new ownership gets the number one pick, and it's gone. Give him to Greg
Popovich.
I
don't think he sells. If he gets Wemby, he keeps the team.
I hope
an extra $1 billion.
If you wait another 5 years, 10 years, you could sell it for significantly more if you have Wemby.
I will say, everyone keeps saying the only thing that can stop Wemby is an injury. I think Michael Jordan could have stopped him. I think Michael Jordan could have broken his confidence and kept him from being the greatest of all time.
That's how you cope.
Yeah, that's probably good for Wemby.
He was the big winner this week. He did all these different interviews. He somehow managed to be likable the whole time. And he's just completely gigantic in a breathtaking way. I can't wait to watch him in person. You're going to Vegas.
I'll be in Vegas, yeah. Maybe Sacramento, too, if Wemby's playing.
Yeah. It seems like he's just one of those dudes who's like, get me out there. Let me play. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it goes. I can't wait to find out what happened to Cam Whitmore. producing this podcast was the serene married guy himself. just at peace with life. Just thinking about having a backyard and a dog.
Oh, yeah. Grilling.
And a beer and a cigarette. Yeah, grilling. Grilled some dogs and burgers. Kyle Creighton, our producer. Thank you for sticking around tonight. We'll be back on this feed on Sunday night. KOC, Kyle. KOC Tate. It's a lot of podcasts today. KOC Tate.
Becky.
Gonna see them on the wayside.